Wonderful. Well, it is wonderful, as Sarah said, to see so many of you here, which I think is a testament really to the fact that this is a subject that is really taxing many of us, and one that is on, I believe, on God's heart. And I guess there are all kinds of people here. Some of you will be parents. Maybe some of you are hoping to be parents. Maybe some of you are youth workers, grandparents, carers, foster carers, all kinds of people. But we have that one thing in common, that we want to see children thrive, the children that we love thrive. And we want to find out God's heart for this area and get wisdom and confidence so that we can approach it with hope. And care for the family. Just put up a hand if you've heard for us about care for the family. Quite a lot of you know about us. Brilliant. Just to say, this little little bag that you came as you came in has got a QR code on that's also on the screen. And if you just go on that with your phone, it will take you through to our website, where if you want to, you could put in your details, but we will be able to keep in touch with you in areas of couple relationships, marriage, parenting, and bereavement, particularly the loss of a child or if someone's been widowed at a young age. And one of the things we do is we go around the country touring, speaking about family issues. And there is a brand new tour in the autumn that will be going around the country over the next few years called Left to Their Own Devices on this topic. So that QR code will take you to details about where we're coming, when we're coming to your city as well. And I'll refer to some of the things in that little bag a bit later on. So the book Left to Their Own Devices, as I said, is in the bookshop, but it was written 2017. And this is a brand new edition, so it's got details about AI, it's got all kinds of updated stats and kingdom principles to help us manage this well, with lots of practical ideas of things we can do as a family. But you know, it was one of those moments that no one in the room will ever forget. So there was a group of parents, a little bit like this, and there was a psychologist who was talking to them about the kind of issues that she was seeing in the children that she was counseling, when all of a sudden, a woman interrupted. Now, this woman had already been fairly vocal in the question and answer session, but she interrupted and she said, "These kids, they just need to toughen up. When I was their age." But she never did get to finish her sentence, because at that moment, the psychologist put up her hand for her to stop. And she said this, "Madam, you were never their age." I think that psychologist was right. In so many ways, we were never their age. Because this current generation are growing up in a world that is light years away from the world that many of us grew up in. And nowhere is that more relevant than the area of technology. Now, many of you here will be younger than me, but in my day, the phone was a device that was, it was a tool that was attached to the wall or just on the side, had a curly cord, and you picked it up and you made a phone call. Today, our phones, the smartphone, is a mini computer in our pockets. It enables us to connect with anyone, anywhere, but it's shaping lives. It's shaping relationships. And it is shaping our discipleship with Jesus. And I love it that this convention has the theme of transforming. And we don't want our phones to be transforming our family lives. We want to be setting good boundaries in place, and we want to have Jesus at the center of our family, transforming them, not the phone. So we're going to be exploring in these two sessions how we can do that. Today we're going to be looking more about time on screens and some issues around that. And then tomorrow we're going to be looking at some bigger and possibly even more challenging areas about what we're seeing, who we're contacting with, and on every case we're going to give some practical ideas of things we can do to help. But let's just ground this in scripture, because I love this little verse in the book of Chronicles, Chronicles 12:22. And this goes back, Chronicles 12:32. So Ezra is writing. He is listing the people that have come to fight for King David against Saul. So verse 23 says this: these are the numbers of the men armed for battle who came to David at Hebron to turn Saul's kingdom over to him, as the Lord had said. And then we jump to verse 32, where we read of the men of Issachar who knew the times and knew what Israel should do. They knew the times, they knew the cultural moment that they were in, and they knew what to do. And that is exactly what we need to know today. We need to know the cultural times. We need to know the information. We need to know what's going on. But also, we need to know what to do about it. Well, I imagine you've come here with different concerns. So let's take a moment just to share those. So if you want to just talk to, if you want to sit by yourself, that's completely fine. But come with either the people you've come with or people you're sitting alongside. And I'm just going to give you a few minutes to talk about what are your concerns in this area. What is the reason that you've come this morning? Give you a few minutes to do that, and then we'll come back together. There we go. Well, let's come back together. Love hearing the buzz of your conversation. And I hope that was helpful just to bring some of those concerns to the surface that we're going to be looking at. And as I say, there'll be an opportunity both today and tomorrow for some questions. But it's not all doom and gloom. There are many advantages to the digital age. We can connect with anybody, anywhere, in real time. Someone can look up the date of the Battle of Hastings for their history homework, the score of the lionesses in penalty time. They can connect with people all around the world, connect with family and friends. Lots of advantages for those who have children with additional need. And if that's you, we have a lot of support at CAF, the family, for those families. But there's some huge advantages there. And just to say, I'm going to be talking about principles today. And some of those principles, you might just have to adapt slightly differently if your child has additional needs. But nevertheless, the principles remain. Lots of advantages there. We could not have got through the pandemic without it. We were able to just transfer our lives online. And for particularly teenagers, puberty is the stage when our young people are trying to establish their identity away from us, their parents, and the digital age enables them to do that. But it's hard because as parents, our job is to keep our children safe. We want to teach them, we want to give them wisdom. And we spend our lives teaching them how to swim, teaching them how to cross the road, putting stair gates up, limiting sugar. We know how to manage those things. We give them broccoli, we get them to exercise. But that's easy because that's our world. But in this area, very often, our children seem to know a little bit more than we do. Let's take a look at this little video.
Entertainment. I know how to control your TV.
I know which remote controls which box.
I know how to cast box sets from the tablet.
I'm the only one who can find that episode you missed.
I know how to connect the laptop to the TV.
Season 2 isn't in the same place as Season 3. And I've done a show about this and also on this.
We are the masters of entertainment because we are 7. You are not. You need help.
Isn't that great? We are 7, you are not, and you need help. I think so often we feel like that. It used to be the case that people were divided into 2 categories according to how we use technology. There were the digital visitors who visited online to do a task and then came off. So you do your Sainsbury's order and come off, and then you connect for your look out for a holiday and come off. It was a tool. And then there were the digital residents who live their life online. They don't really know the difference between online and offline. It's all life. And it used to be that most parents were the visitors, most young people and children were the residents. I think that's changed since the pandemic. The lines have blurred. We've all had to upskill. But nevertheless, our children generally know a little bit more than we do. So let's look now at some of the challenges. And the main one we're going to look at today is time. Time on screens. Eric Schmidt, who was the former chair of Google, he said this: if you have a child, you'll notice that they have two states, asleep or online. And many parents might agree with that, because our children are on screens during the school day, then they come home and they just flop onto the sofa in front of the Xbox, connecting with friends, chatting late into the night. The average time for a young person to be on a screen during the day is 9 hours, and life is digital by default. Now, we used to think this was really just the teenagers, but it's not. It's little ones as well. 68% of 3 to 7-year-olds have a tablet. 27% have a smartphone. Now, we have, as I said, 8 little grandchildren, and our daughter has 4 little ones, and they live on an organic farm right down in Somerset. So by any stretch of the imagination, her life and their life is low tech. Well, a while ago, Tabitha, who is 3, had done something naughty, and she had to sit on the thinking step. It used to be called the naughty step, it's now the thinking step. And she had to be on this step for 3 minutes because she was 3. So my daughter Charlotte gave her her phone, and she said, and she set it so she could see how long 3 minutes was. And she gave it to her and she said, now just look at that little dial, and when it reaches the end, you'll know 3 minutes is up. It will seem a long time, but that little bottom has to stay on those stair, on that step for that amount of time. So my daughter went back into the kitchen. At the same time, my husband is a lawyer, and he is in Bristol in his office doing legal things. And his phone goes, and it's, he thinks, my daughter. He says, hi, Charlotte. Little voice, hi, Grandpa. And little Tabitha, age 3, was just catching up on some calls while doing time out. Now, I actually think what it was, because how did she do that? We think she saw his photo, you know, with next to the number and pressed it because she recognized it. But it was a funny and quite a sobering moment. So whether it's your 3-year-old who is having a tantrum because they've told screen time's over, or your teenager and you think they need to have their phone surgically removed from their hand or their AirPods from their ears, time on screens affects us all. Just listen to these teenagers. These are some teenagers that we interviewed about their phone use. Let's listen to this.
Hello, young person. Your mission, if you choose to accept it,
is to answer the below quiz about your phone on tech use.
We want you to answer the questions as honestly as possible.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Let's go.
What do you spend most time doing on your phone?
TikTok, because it's pretty much the only thing that entertains me and makes me laugh.
I spend most of my time on Snapchat.
I have an app called Discord.
I'm like mostly on the phone to my friends, or like on TikTok or something.
Probably scrolling on TikTok.
Yeah, watching TikTok as well, playing a bit of games. It can be very addicting.
How long do you spend on your phone a day?
Oh.
Probably about 3 to 4 hours a day.
Oh. 4 to 6 hours.
When I get home, I normally just like stay in my room all day, so I'm just on my phone as soon as I get home.
On weekends, basically the whole day.
8 hours or more, depends on how bored I am on that day. So.
Like, we all just rely on our phones, that's why they're so addictive.
I say I'm very addictive.
I think I'm addicted.
I'm addicted to my phone.
I'm a bit like addicted.
I'm addicted to my phone.
Other than being addicted to my phone, I am more addicted to my PlayStation, because
if I just stop playing them, I feel like I'm going to lose all the progress and I'm going to fall behind in my game, so...
I think gaming's really addictive, so you can, like, easily, like, start in the morning and be like, oh, what's the time? Oh, 5 hours already. Like, you're not really going to know.
What have you found are the downsides of social media?
Cyberbullying, because it can get you really down.
They just, like, find something to just, like, make fun of you about and everything.
Yeah, like, they hide behind screens before they say something in real life.
Yeah.
Also, the fact that you can see literally anything unless you put on the right settings, and they're really hard to find.
It might be something you don't like or can make you feel very uncomfortable. It can have a very big impact on you.
But it's also you can see things that, like, you can compare yourself to, and that's pretty damaging.
People usually post only about the good side of, like, their personal lives, and then you sometimes, like, compare yourself to other person's life, and that makes you, like, sometimes depressed.
It's just normal to see, to look on the comments of a video and see at least one hate comment, and it shouldn't be normal.
Do you ever wish you could spend less time on your phone? Well, really, I do wish that.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, I do.
I'd love to spend less time on my phone.
I honestly think that I should get off my phone all the time.
Sometimes I do wish I could spend a little bit less time on my phone.
To be honest, they were really meant to help us in this generation, but then I think we used it the wrong way and done all sorts of other stuff.
What would you do if you weren't spending so much time on your phone?
Just, like, try and, like, communicate with other people.
I could spend my time doing more, like, positive stuff.
I like going outside a lot and, like, playing football with, like, people on the street as well.
Sometimes I need to study.
Since I'm going to, like, college and all that, I really need to focus on my book so I can get a better future.
Just as him, I want to focus on my future.
Tidying, helping your parents out.
Yeah.
And just try and, like, go outside more.
I feel like I just want to go outside a bit.
Play, like, go out with your friends more.
Well done. You've completed the task.
Go and get a donut.
It's sobering, isn't it? some of those answers. And I think looking at the issue of time, social psychologist and the author, American author Jonathan Haidt. Many of you may have come across his book, The Anxious Generation, but he contrasts the play-based childhood that many of us experience with the phone-based childhood of this generation. And there are four key ways that time on screens is impacting our young people. The first is social deprivation. So in relation to screens, not having that time, face-to-face time with other people, and not being able to read those non-verbal cues. Many young people saying that they feel lonely, that they feel isolated. And then there is sleep deprivation, poor sleep. And that's because many young people are sleeping with their phones by their beds. Many schools reporting children are coming to school in the morning tired. And we have heard of young people setting alarms during the night at various times just so they can check on their social media feeds. One in four children are reported not to get enough sleep. Then decreased attention span, poor attention span. Apparently, attention span has decreased by 4 seconds just since 2000. And many of them is because they're multitasking. So heavy media multitasking is leading to poorer concentration. Schools are reporting that, which is why many schools now are having no phone policies. And then, as we saw in that video, screen addiction. I thought it was so moving that many of those young people, they wanted to change. They felt they were addicted to their phones. They wanted to change, but they didn't know what to do about it. Now, why is it so hard? Well, it is because we are not on a level playing field. There are some big forces out there that mean that this is difficult. And the first one is something called the attention economy. the attention economy. The biggest commodity today is no longer gold or oil or precious metals, it's attention. Our attention, our children's attention, and the tech companies are paying billions of pounds to get it. And they're doing it in various ways. And one of the ways is through the algorithms. The algorithms, which are probably the most powerful mechanism for grabbing our attention. It's a series of inbuilt commands that are designed to achieve a specific goal. The goal for the tech companies is to make money by getting our attention. And so the algorithm ensures that more and more extreme content is offered on the subject of interest. It can analyze what we're looking at and then tailor the content to fill our feeds. Now, I discovered this. I made the mistake of clicking on this link that was mascara tips and mistakes for women over 50. I slightly flatter myself on the age, but anyway, I clicked on this thing. I am now inundated with makeup tips for the older woman and wrinkle-saving mechanisms and all that sort of thing. And that's the algorithm. It's doing that. So if we fall for that, how much more are children? The algorithm plays into their need for approval and heightens comparison. So that's the algorithm. Second one is called the slot machine effect. So the most profitable part of any casino is the slot machine. And it is designed to draw us into the zone. So in our brains, the chemical dopamine is activated when we do something pleasurable. And what happens is if we do something pleasurable, this is activated, makes us feel good, so we want to go back for more. And the small, regular wins that are achieved when you pull the lever of a slot machine, that is exactly the same thing that happens in our brain when we go back to our phone to check if we've got a like or if we have any followers. It's the same trigger that keeps us at the roulette wheel that keeps us eyeballing our screens. Small, regular wins, small, variable, regular wins, but the cost, instead of money, it's our time and it's our attention. Then our devices themselves, if you think about our phones, the way they're designed. So you have the infinite scroll, the pull to refresh, giving that constant content, the tick that changes color when somebody reads our message. The three little dots in the right-hand corner, Dan is typing. Think, oh, what is Dan saying? Draws us in. And those notifications that are designed to be that color red for a reason, to grab our attention. And then the whole area that was mentioned by those teenagers of gaming. We have many parents who are concerned about gaming. And just to say first off, it's not all bad. It's a new medium for storytelling, for adventure, and for creativity. But again, the way that the games are designed are to draw us in to the next level and to grab our time and attention. The average amount of hours that someone will play gaming before 21 is 10,000. And 67% of people game alone. So it's not only creating screen time, but it's often in isolation. I read an Ofcom report that was looking into the gaming habits of 14-year-olds, and they interviewed somebody called Jack, who was 14. And Jack had been loving being out on his bike, but he broke his leg. So he had got into gaming in his bedroom. And his mother got very concerned about the fact that he was not appearing for family meals, seemed to be becoming more and more isolated. And she tried to get him to engage with family life, but to no avail. So she enlisted the grandmother to help. Always a good idea to get the grannies on board. And the granny said she would give Jack £500 if he came off the game and appeared for family meals. He said no. Can you imagine? Such was the draw of the game. Now, talking to young people, one of the things they often say, and it's just a little tip for parents, is that I can't just come off my game. They tell me that the food's ready. I'm going to let my team down. I'm going to lose my ratings. It's just not possible. And so just giving them a little bit of warning. You know, we're going to have food in half an hour. Do you really have time to start that game? Is a good question to ask. The World Health Organization actually has a recognized addiction called a gaming disorder. And if you are concerned about a child or a young person, definitely seek some help. Talk to your GP or a health professional. More likely, it's just a very annoying habit that's hard to manage in the home. To be an addiction, it has to be for over a year. It has to be to the detriment of family, friends, food, the whole of life. It's probably just that habit that we have to manage. But one thing just to say is gaming offers an escape. And it might be the symptom of something else, that there's something else going on in our young people's lives that they're trying to escape from. So worth having a think about that. So, gaming. And then we add to all of that the teenage brain. Now, many of you may know about this, but if you don't know about the teenage brain, it will be worth you coming this morning just to know about this if you have teenagers or soon to be teenagers. We used to think all the brain activity took place and development when they were little. But since MRI scanning, we now know loads of development takes place in the teenage years. It's making the brain faster and more efficient. That's the good news. Bad news is the very last part of the brain to develop is this part at the front called the prefrontal cortex. This is the part of the brain that is responsible for making sensible long-term decisions. It's responsible for deferred gratification. It's the brakes. This is just not developed. So our young people use a different part of their brain. They use the amygdala, which is the seat of the emotions. They are literally thinking with their feelings, which is why they go cycling without a helmet, why they press send on that inappropriate selfie, why they stay gaming till 3 a.m. the night before their maths GCSE exam. They are a work in progress. This part of the brain is not yet developed. And that just helps us approach that a little bit easier. One mum said this. She said, when she discovered about the teenage brain, she said, it's such a relief because now I know not only is it not all my fault, it's not all his fault either. It is a perfect storm. If you think about that, the attention economy, the algorithms, the devices, the slot machine effect, gaming added to the teenage brain. No wonder this is difficult. So, what can we do about it? Well, first of all, we can be intentional. Be intentional. Interesting, many of the people that work in the tech industry are very strict about the amount of time that their children are allowed on screens because they know the addictive nature of it. But I would say it's not just quantity of time because we use our screens for so many more things now. And so it's worth thinking again, what is it that they're using it for? Because not all screen time is the same. So are they doing their homework? Are they FaceTiming their aunt or uncle? Are they gaming? What are they using the screens for? Look at it like that, a little bit more granularly than just blanket screen time. And involve our young people in the discussion, in putting some boundaries in place. But if you do that, you'll need to draw up a chair for somebody else to join the conversation. That person is everybody else's parent, because you are here. Everyone else's parent allows them to take a smartphone to preschool. Everybody else's parent allows them to be on, watching a 18 when they're 12 or whatever. We are the parents. We love them the most. It's our responsibility to put those boundaries in place according to our family values. It can be hard. It can be hard if we're different than the other family down the road, but it is worth taking a hit in the popularity stakes over this because boundaries are about security. They're not just about discipline. And one thing to say on this as well, it is attention to manage. This is not the silver bullet. You're not going to put your boundaries in place and it's going to be fine forever because children get older, technology develops. It's something we have to come back to time and time again. Tomorrow, I'm going to be talking in more detail about something called a family media agreement. Just a spoiler alert for you today, little leaflet in the bag about that, about how we set some of those boundaries. And we'll look at that in more detail tomorrow. But boundaries are important for our children's security. Solomon, nearly 3,000 years ago, Book of Proverbs, he did not have a smartphone, but he wrote this: above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. The things that we love and we pay attention to shape the people that we become. So the boundaries that we put in place enable us to decide the things that we want to be shaping our children's lives rather than them and our phones shaping us. So that's be intentional. Second one, be together. If you are parenting as a husband and wife in the same home, try and be consistent with what your ground rules are. So no good mum saying no more devices for the rest of the day, dad coming in after work and saying, hey, let's just have a game of FIFA or whatever. They need consistency. If you're parenting on your own, that can be hard. Get people to support you. And if you are co-parenting, so if you have your children for some time in one home and then the other parent has them in another home for the rest of the week, that can be especially hard. Family life can be complicated and difficult. But where possible, try and have those consistent boundaries for our children's security. And then get together with other parents. Now, doing something like that at Keswick is a brilliant opportunity. Or in your churches, find like-minded parents who have similar values, who can set the same ground rules for what happens to phones on sleepovers. Always a misnomer that, isn't there? No sleep ever happens on a sleepover. But when you get your first smartphone, and we'll talk a little bit more about that tomorrow, you may have heard of the smartphone-free childhood movement. It began by two mums deciding that they were going to delay getting their child a smartphone. And they put some posts up on social media, but it went viral. And now it's a really big groundswell grassroots movement. Last time I looked, it had 150,000 signatures of parents agreeing together, let's delay when we're going to give our child a smartphone. So get together with other like-minded parents. And the next one, be curious. So have open conversations with your children. Don't just come in with what we think. Ask them what they think. Ask them to reflect on their use of technology. How do they feel when they've been gaming for an hour or more? What platforms do they like to be on? What platforms are their friends on? All kinds of questions. Tomorrow we're going to look more at AI and deep fakes, but in this world of disinformation, let's teach them to be curious and to have that incredibly important skill of critical thinking. Helping them to ask questions so they're not just accepting everything at face value. What's the source? Do we know it's reliable? Does it accord with other things that we know? We don't want them to be cynical, nor do we want them to be naive. Jesus said in Matthew, when he was sending out the disciples, to be wise as serpents, innocent as doves. And we need that critical thinking for our children. Now, I imagine you came here this morning to get some good tips on how to manage your children's phone use, but this next one is a little bit close to home. Be an example. We are role models for the way that we use technology, and our children take their cue from us. We think they don't listen to us, so we ask them to hang up their coat, and it is still in the hall on the floor. We ask them to clear up their bedroom, and we go in, and it's still got crisp packets and half-drunk mugs of tea. We think they don't listen. They don't miss a thing. Let's listen to what some younger children said about their parents' use of technology.
We're going to be discussing our parents' phone usage. So first question, how often do your parents use their phones?
Quite a lot.
24/7, easy.
Once or twice an hour?
4 hours.
Yeah, my dad
uses his phone a lot more than my mum.
What do you think they're doing on their phones, or do you know what they're doing on their phones?
Probably just going on Instagram or something like that.
Playing games, texting their friends, talking to her mum, playing chess. All I hear is of messages, like.
And my mum and my daddy works really hard every single day.
My dad's always on ChatGPT.
My mum and dad always use their phone on the sofa,
oblivious to what's going on around them, just on their phone.
My mum always likes to change her phone case because it keeps smashing.
Do you wish your parents were on their phones more, so they were on it more, or less?
Less. So we can do more things than just play on your phone.
I mean, they probably could use it a little bit less, but then my dad uses it for educational stuff.
I feel disappointed because I have to wait sometimes when they finish.
And if they're sending a message, you can't even get them to look at you.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
I'm just like, wait, I need to finish my messaging.
You're like, wee.
Do you have to shout really loud?
Yes.
Not really loud. Yeah.
Very loud.
She's on her phone. I say for her to come. She says, I'm coming. 3 minutes later, she actually comes.
Sometimes I speak over when she's talking to someone on the phone.
Well, you're not supposed to do that sometimes.
And if they were on their phones less, what would you like them to do with you?
Play.
Take me to McDonald's.
Playing Lego with my mum.
I would like want my dad to play football with me.
And my pancakes. And they give me their pancakes for Valentine's Day.
Who knew you had pancakes on Valentine's Day? But it's sobering, isn't it? We think they don't listen, but they don't miss a thing. There's a phrase called smartphone orphans. Children who feel like they're disconnected from their parents because the parents are on their phones. And if we are, first thing we do when we come in, we check our emails. If we're watching them swim or listen to them read and we're just scrolling through messages, they will notice. They will notice. We had a sobering thing. We had we were filming a parenting course. And we interviewed a dad who said that he had had a thing on a Saturday morning. His little boy had wanted him to play football. And he said, I was really busy. I was just trying to catch up on my messages and sort something out at work. And my eight-year-old came in and said, Dad, can we play football? And he said, in a minute. He went away, came back. Dad, can we play football? And he said, yeah, in a minute. I'm just going to do this. In a minute. Went away, came back again. Dad, you said we could play football. And he said, I was really irritated because I was trying to get this done. I said, can't you see I'm busy? And he said, this little boy just shrugged his shoulders and went out, but not before turning and looking over his shoulder and saying, you're a nicer dad without your phone. Really sobering moment. We're not giving them eye contact if we're on our phone. A friend said to me, I realise that when I'm on my phone, they don't know if I am looking up a lovely recipe that we could cook for their tea, if I am sorting out a play date, or if I'm scrolling through pictures of cats. They don't know. All they see is the back of the phone. It's said of parenting, the days are long and the years are short. And I wonder if we look back at what we were doing on our phones, chasing down that Amazon delivery, looking at the pictures of wedding disasters, or connecting with a friend, whatever it is, I wonder if we will look back and think, why was it that that felt so important that it took time away from connecting with my child? We can't give them 100% of our time. Our phones are an important part of our lives. But when we are with them, let's really be present and really with them. We can not be physically present and emotionally disengaged, but emotionally and physically engaged. And then finally, the last one is be positive. Be positive. So it's not all bad. We can use technology to enrich our family lives together and to build relationship together. Now, Roblox or Minecraft may not be your best way of spending a Saturday afternoon, but Your child enjoys it, so be as interested in it as you might be in their Lego, their football, their ballet, or whatever. Rather than just policing and restricting time, let's use it for good. Now, of course, we want some time away from screens. That is really important, and we'll talk about that a bit more tomorrow, building time in where that is screen-free. But one dad said this. He said, we used to try and go out for a walk at the weekend, and I would say to my boys, pick up your coats, put your phones away, we're going out. And they'd say, ooh, we don't want to do it. And they would moan away. And he said, everything changed when we changed our approach. So now we say, pick up your coats, pick up your phones, and we're going to go out, and we're going to take selfies, and we're going to make videos. And he said, we have loads of fun with technology. Maybe you're on your drive home. You could get your child to make the playlist for what you want to listen to in the car. Another friend, they use AI, and they say, tell us a story about when the seagull ate mummy's ice cream on the beach. Or they have a picture, and everyone with ChatGPT has to describe the picture, and the one whose picture most resembles the original one wins. I mean, there's loads of stuff we can do with technology. And of course, there is great faith content that we can use. Faith in Kids, Lectio for Families, Superbook, Bible App for Kids, Sun School, Bible Engagement Project, YouTube things like Wren Collective Kids Worship, stuff that will be relevant here at Keswick as well. You choose what works for you and your family. I heard of one family, and I have to say, this never did work for us. I always loved the idea of family devotions and had this great picture of everyone wonderfully sitting down and one of us with a guitar and it would all be peaceful. Never quite worked out like that. It was always the cue for World War III between our three boys. But if family devotions work for you, and this might work, so one family we know, and they record them after on the Sunday morning after the service. They get the children and they get the adults just to record really quickly one thing they learn from the service. And then they sit down together and they talk about it. I mean, what a great way, again, to use technology. So we've covered quite a lot in terms of time on screens. And I want to give you a little bit of time for some questions. Let me just end by reading just a couple of verses from Philippians that I think really helps us think this is where we want to be heading. Because it says, Paul says, finally, whatever is true, whatever's noble, whatever's right, whatever's pure, whatever's lovely, whatever's admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you've learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. Let's make sure that our screens are used by us and aren't the things that are shaping us, but our eyes are on those things that are going to lead us to Jesus and to be more like him. So we've got a few minutes for questions. Why don't you just turn to the person next to you, maybe share one thing that you that was new or that struck you, and then I think Sarah's got a mic and we can just take a couple of questions. So just a couple of minutes to do that and then we'll take a couple of questions.
Oh yeah, thank you very much for what you said this morning. There's a lot of talk about how much time we spend on screens. So is there a safe amount of time or the right amount of time for different ages, or you know, what should we be aiming for?
Lovely. So question, I'm sure everyone did hear it, but just in case you didn't, is there a how much time should we be aiming for on screens? So caveat, I would say to start with that we know our child best, we love them best, and we know their maturity and we know their behavior after they've been on screens, and so we want to put all that into the mix. I think it is something that we need to work out ourselves for our family. But as a broad brush, I would say under two, they don't really need to be on screens. I mean, CBBs are a lifesaver, hey? So, but I would say that. And then it's really just working out for your for your child and your family. I think the main thing is that we're in control with what they're watching and when they're watching it. They're not on a kind of, you know, infinite refresh of things. You can be on a YouTube channel and watching something lovely, and then suddenly you go out the room and it goes onto something else. So it's about eyes on. You know, for your child, if you look on the smartphone free childhood website, there are some specific things on that. They would say no phones under 14 and no social media under 16. I probably think there's a bit more nuance to that personally, but I would just say, particularly on the smartphone, delay as long as possible, but work it out for your family. And it's harder if you've got younger siblings as well. So that is in the mix. Is that helpful?
How do we protect our children against cyberbullying? Because what are the signs that they're being bullied? Because if they're spending all their time away, it might be a really obvious question. Sorry if it's really...
It's not an obvious question. It's an excellent question. And so how do we protect them from cyberbullying? If you come tomorrow, I am going to talk about bullying in a lot more detail, and in Left Their Own Devices there's a whole section on it with how to spot the signs, what to do if your child is the bully. But to spot the signs, I would say if they're becoming more withdrawn than usual, if they're on their phone more than usual, if it feels like they're more anxious when they've been on their phone, and then beginning to... That's why communication is so important. Beginning to have those conversations early on about the possibility of bullying, how it makes them feel, and then things that we can do about it, like not saying don't go online at all, because then we're cutting them off from a lot of the fun and support that they've been having, but blocking the person, blocking the perpetrator of the bully, involving the school. Just a few highlights there, but come tomorrow and we'll look at that a little bit more. There's one back there.
Hello. You mentioned that a lot of young people are feeling lonely, and you also suggested that we look more at how young people and children are using their devices when they're on them. And I just wondered if there's anything we could be encouraging that would help them to use things like social media to make more meaningful connections and avoid sort of more superficial kind of, if you see what I mean.
Absolutely. So how can we help our children build more meaningful connections and have more life-giving content, really, from social media? So I think just asking that question is a brilliant first step for them. So what are you getting from social media? And having a look at the platforms that don't encourage comparison. So interestingly, mental health stats, one of the dates that they started to increase in terms of depression and anxiety was the same year that Instagram came on the scene, and the front-facing camera, which is the one that involves comparison. So connecting with friends that you know are bringing life to them, that they can have fun with, looking at sites that are wholesome and that don't produce anxiety, and using technology in that way, but also making sure they're having those face-to-face friendships as well.
I just wondered if you had any tips about how to have the conversations about being different as a family, or setting different ground rules, or sort of living differently to maybe their friends and those around them.
Wow, well, that is a very good question, and it is so hard. I was just chatting earlier about how it's so hard if your child is the only one that's different. So I think finding the positives is a good thing. So rather than it's just a list of in our family we don't, find some things that we do. I think that is life. If we're trying to follow Jesus, actually, we are going to be countercultural, but there can be something quite exciting and inspiring about that. But I would say, so come at it from an honest point of view, that we don't have to be like everybody else. And this is why. I think the why is really important. And trying to find ways maybe, so I was chatting to someone last week and they had said their child couldn't have a phone. They were the only one in the class who didn't. And so bless them, they gave her an old iPod to take into school, so she had something to put into the box with all the other children who are putting their phones in the box at the beginning of the day. There are, I'll talk a bit more about it tomorrow, lots of phones that look like smartphones but aren't. So there are ways that we can kind of make it not quite so harsh for them. But I would say that, and yes, focus on the good, the fun things that we're doing. We're not just saying no to everything. But it's hard and it's exhausting, but that is the job of a parent.
I'm actually asking on behalf of my son. He said, how do you get their child off their mobile phone or devices without getting them upset and angry?
Very good. Well, if there was an easy answer to that, I would love to know. But I think giving notice, so you're not just coming in saying, right now, we're going out, off your phone. I think working at this family media agreement, which I'll talk about tomorrow, about having something more fun to do as well, and just having those boundaries in place so we all know up front where they are and that parents do it as well. That would be our top tips. But thank you so much all for coming. It's been wonderful. I'll be around to chat. Do check out Care for the Family and do come back tomorrow. Thanks.